All right, here we are for our culture segment. And in case you're wondering, no, this is not Lisa. This is Catherine Utzler. I'm actually usually on the other side of the mic producing the show, but Lisa's out today. I like to think of myself as Lisa without as much street cred. But I didn't want you to miss the chance to meet our guest today, Pastor John Murphy. Welcome to the Boundless Show, John.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So John actually served our country as an infantryman for about 3 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is timely because Veterans Day is coming up this Saturday. And as a bonus, he has a great beard, which ties in nicely to No
right.
Shave November.
I assume
you're a regular participant.
I started that a few years ago.
Oh, you actually started it? Wow. I didn't even know. But actually now he's the lead pastor at Veritas Church in North Carolina. But before we jump into that, it's not really where you expected to end up, right?
In life.
No. So you had a dream as a kid. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I wanted to be in the military for my whole life. I just always had this profound sense of duty and thought that was what I was supposed to do. Wanted to do it forever, and the Lord had different plans. Yeah.
Yeah, so you kind of talked about that being your dream.
Yeah.
And how it kind of became who you are. And
absolutely.
I think we all kind of have that tendency. So what happened with that? How did it become your identity?
Yeah, well, we're all prone to find our identity and things like that, career, you know, who the students we are, all of that. And so for me, it was I lost myself in that. That became the deepest and truest part about me, was who I was as a soldier. And so I had my whole career lined out. I was going to come back from this deployment and then go over to this a specific type of training. And then I knew exactly where I was going to go. And I love being a soldier, certainly like anywhere else. There's bureaucracy and there are difficult things, but I love what I got to do. And it was all I ever cared about. And so losing that was difficult. I felt like I lost who I was. I just didn't know who I was without that.
Yeah. So let's talk about how you lost it. So you got married right before you got deployed, right?
Yep.
So how did that work out?
Yeah, I got married 2 months before I deployed to a woman who is my wife still. She's long-suffering and incredible. She had never moved in her entire life, had lived in the same house her entire life. And we have moved 14 times since we got married in 2005. So yes, long-suffering.
So you got married really young?
We did. Yeah. We got married a month before I turned 20.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know where people were saying like, hey guys, chill.
But obviously it worked out well.
It did. Yeah. It did. The Lord just in our first 2 years of marriage took us through, it seems like, what he spaces out for a lot of other people over 15 years or so.
Yeah. How did you balance that dream of marrying her with your dream of being in the military?
Yeah. She was subservient to my identity as a soldier. So it was and I was very honest. I love you, I'm for you, but the military is in the Army and the Marine Corps, they'll say a lot of times if the Army wanted you to have a wife, they would have issued you one.
Oh,
and so
man.
The mentality is you can get married if you want to, but it better be very clear that number one priority is being a soldier.
Huh.
And so I'm sure that was difficult for her. It was difficult for her, but it was just a reality that military spouses, be them husbands or wives of people who are in the military, kind of have to deal with. It's hard.
Yeah. So you got deployed to Afghanistan, right?
Yep.
And then, was it a year later you had the accident? Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So I got deployed to Afghanistan in 2005, got back November of 2005, and in January of 2006, so just a couple months later, we were on just a regular training parachute jump in Fort Bragg. And I had a problem with my parachute, malfunction with my parachute, and ended up getting hurt, breaking my back on that jump. And that was the beginning of the end of my military career.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got to be honest. I heard that's called a cigarette roll. So
yes.
I Googled it, but all I saw were pictures
I know,
of actual
it's probably,
cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, nope.
Like, what is this? Yeah, cigarette roll is where your parachute comes out, but it doesn't actually open up. So it looks like a cheaply rolled cigarette. And functions probably about the same.
Wow. So you fell and you broke your back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then your military career is over. So how are you feeling at that point?
Pretty lost. I didn't want to get out. I, you know, and I just remember thinking I'm trained to do a couple very specific things, and none of them have a civilian counterpart. There's no transferable job skills that I have. And so it was really, really difficult getting out.
Yeah. I mean, so at the time, I feel like the problem with identity crisis like that is that you never realize you're putting your identity in that at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, so how did you finally figure out that that was the problem?
Yeah, I'm Irish, so I'm prone to being stubborn by genetics even. I'm hard-headed. It takes me a lot. And so that was the process of the Lord really taking away anything that I had my identity in. So it was being a soldier, being physically just better than everyone else. I prided myself in being physically able to do things that other people weren't able to do. That was taken away because I obviously couldn't work out. And so I gained a lot of weight. I will never forget the vision of laying on the couch in a 700 square foot basement apartment, watching my wife go to work, watching her go off for 12 hours because I was unemployed and physically not able to do anything. And so the identity of just being able to provide for my family. We had a young son at that time who had been born 2 weeks before I got out of the military.
Wow.
So it was a really difficult process, and it just, I was haunted by men in general. And if you're a guy and listening to this, you know it's true, whether or not you admit it. Men in general are haunted by the question, am I enough? So typically our entire lives are geared towards proving that we are enough, be it through sports in high school or the program or the university that we get into or the job that we have. We're just prone to proving that we're enough. And so,
yeah, how do we combat that day to day?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I think for me, I was not believing what Jesus said about me. And that's that my truest and deepest identity is a beloved son of the Most High God. And,
right. Which sounds so good, but then in the moment you're like, that doesn't mean
anything. It looks good on paper, but
you're
like, well, that doesn't pay the bills and it doesn't make other people impressed with me. And
right.
So I think we all go through, it depends when, but somewhere in our 20s, a lot of times we're just trying to prove to other people that we're enough. A lot of times in our 30s, we're trying to prove to ourselves that we're enough, that we really can make it. And then there comes a point where we realize we need a deeper identity than just what we're able to put forth.
Yeah. Yeah. So you started healing from that. You started getting involved in your local church.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I think as soon as you felt like you kind of were getting your life right back with God, then you realized something else about yourself, right?
Yeah.
And that was this intense hatred that you had.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So when I got plugged into this local church, starting to just walk through these things with a community that blew me away, that was authentic and real, and a lot of what I had grown up with, I felt like was, let's just come in and pretend like we have it all together. And I knew I didn't have it all together. And so finding a community where people understood that and just talked about how good Jesus was and how I wasn't too far gone for the grace of Jesus blew me away. What I didn't know how to deal with was, as a result of being some of the things we did and saw while we were in the Middle East, I had developed this deep-seated hatred, racism towards anyone that I thought was Middle Eastern or that I thought was a Muslim, and really struggled with that because at the same time that my identity is being worked out and I'm realizing that I, through Jesus, I have the approval of God and I really don't need anyone else's approval. While I'm walking through that, it felt like there's growth in my marriage and who I was as a father. And this area of darkness was just impenetrable, it felt like. And it really was because I wasn't bringing it into the light. And so
it
was a hard thing.
Yeah. And obviously we know hatred of anybody is a problem.
Yeah.
But why, I mean, for Americans who've seen things that people from the Middle East have done, I mean, I think a lot of people might be listening and saying, well, it's like, that's pretty normal that you would feel that way. So why was it bad to feel that way?
I think what's really important that we have to be able to separate that we're just not doing a good job as a society right now, certainly in the church and the media fuels this, but what we have to separate is it's a good and a right and a godly thing to desire justice. And so to desire justice doesn't mean that you have to hate an entire people group. And to love a people group, you can still love a people group and desire justice to be done. And so I think that's what I realized, that Jesus came to rescue me when I was his enemy, not when I was morally neutral, not when I was trying to find my way towards him, but when I was an enemy. It just hit me like, if I've been forgiven and pursued while I was an enemy, how can I withhold that from an entire people group?
Wow.
And then realizing ultimately that I can desire justice because God's a God of justice, and really know, because he's promised it, that justice will be done, and either justice will be done temporarily right now, it will be done in finality when Christ comes back and the judgment for their acts are poured out on their shoulders, or they'll turn to Christ and repent, and the punishment for what they've done will fall on the shoulders of Christ. And that's where I know the gospel compels us towards, is I want justice to be done. But ultimately, I'm praying that among Muslim terrorists and ISIS and in everyone, that justice ultimately will fall on the shoulders of Christ because they've turned to Jesus and confessed their sins and repented and believed the gospel.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Yeah. I have a friend who's an unbeliever, and we were talking about this one time, and yeah. She was saying, so under Christ, you think you're the same as those people that do all those terrible things?
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to answer it because
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I think it's hard, but we just all
sin. Because
earthly
consequences are so...
Absolutely. It's different.
Evident.
So
yeah.
One, and we can't separate our emotions and feelings from it. So
right.
It feels so much worse. And certainly there are worse consequences in the here and now. But all rebellion against God is rebellion against a holy God. And so who am I to say that my rebellion is better? I think I look at heinous sin that other people commit and think, well, but for the grace of God, that would be me. But for the restraining power of God and the grace of Jesus, I probably would have acted on some of the hatred that was in my heart. And I think it's just not safe when we get this, well, it's us versus them. My sin's better than their sin. That's the Pharisee who prays, God, I thank you that I'm not like this tax collector.
Right.
And then the tax collector beats his chest and says, be merciful to me, a sinner. And that's the attitude that I want. And I also want God to be merciful to other sinners as much as I want to see justice done. And as much as I rejoice when justice is done.
Right.
Yeah.
So looking at this practically as, you know, young people who are trying to navigate politics and being politically correct, but also standing for justice and also, you know, fighting
yeah.
for Christ, what can we do to reach out to Muslims or
yeah.
to fight this?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to have conversations with people who are different than you. What we tend to do is isolate ourselves and surround ourselves with people who only think the way we think, believe what we believe, and agree with what we agree with. And what happens so powerfully is when you sit across the table with somebody who's different than you and say, hey, we may leave this disagreeing still, but I want to actually hear you. I want to understand how you're feeling. I want to understand what it's like to see the world through your eyes. And as I've done that,
can you tell me a story
incredible.
Of how you've done
so
that?
I thought, I really just had it ingrained in me that most Muslims hate us. And I just, a couple months ago with a few guys from the church, went to Iraq. And certainly I've realized here in engaging with Muslims that is not true. That's not true. I was discipled in ministry actually by a guy who's a Iranian-born former Muslim named
wow.
Afshin Ziafat. So I was at his church down in Texas, and that's just God's kindness that would be the man that he would have disciple me in ministry. So being over in the Middle East a couple months ago, the people there were so incredibly hospitable. We would go around and be invited into the homes of people who are Muslims. They're not former Muslims who are now Christians, although we certainly interacted with a lot of folks who that was their story. They're currently Muslims, and they brought us in and served us tea. It's a big part of the culture, and really wanted to hear what we had to say. And so we talked with them about Jesus and what we believe and asked them about what they believed. And powerful things happen when we reject homogeny, just reject this. We just want to be around people who are the exact same as us. You see this in Paul as he goes and plants churches and he goes into Ephesus and he goes down to this place where all these pagans were gathered and he has a conversation with them. He goes to the Hall of Tyrannus and the text says that he's like they're reasoning together, which means they're actually having a conversation. And I think especially in our younger culture here, both in the United States and internationally, dialogue is really important.
Oh, yeah.
I think people are in general sick of just a monologue where somebody just tells them, hey, here's what you need to believe.
But at the same time, dialogue gets awkward.
Yeah, and so it does.
I think you have to forget about yourself.
It does.
I don't know.
And we've got to be comfortable. I think when we're having conversations with people who are different than us, and so we're having dialogue, it's going to get uncomfortable and we're going to step on toes. So I have a lot of relationships with people who I love, who aren't Christians, don't see like me, or who are Christians and don't see certain things like me. And so I'll just say, I'm fairly blunt. And so I'll just say, hey, I'm probably going to step on toes, but I'm just going to trust that we love each other. And I'm going to say, it's okay for you to tell me, hey, I know you didn't mean it this way, but here's how I heard the way you just said that. And so I get to
That's
have
cool.
these conversations that are, and I'm learning, and this is across the board. This is with Muslims. This is with, people who are black, who are really struggling with how they feel in our country right now and seeing, a lack of diversity. And it's just been an incredible thing to just say, wow, it's actually pretty important to talk with people who see the world differently than me.
Yeah. And speaking of that concept, so how do we balance being proud of our country and you know, being patriotic isn't necessarily a glamorous thing, I guess, but how do we balance appreciating the freedom that we have while still keeping in perspective that our country is not perfect and that God it should be honored above all?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what's so hard. And I think, we have a tendency to view America like America is the new Israel and all of God's promises in the Old Testament were for America. And I love this country. It was a privilege and an honor to serve this country, but my ultimate citizenship is as a son of God, and the kingdom of God. And so I can value where he has me. Romans talks about the value of government. So I don't just want to reject all that and say, well, how terrible is all this? But it enables me to see the weaknesses and to see the faults and to be able to call out, like, I love this country and we're not perfect. Only Jesus is perfect. And so it's okay to, you can be patriotic, love the country, and also be able to say, boy, there's some things that we want to see the hope of the gospel reach, and to realize that Jesus is the only hope. America is not the hope for the world. Jesus is. And I say that as somebody who fought and bled for this country, and I deeply love America. I still tear up every time I hear the national anthem. But what the gospel has freed me to do is to see Jesus is my hope. And so I'm able to say, boy, there's some things that, that aren't okay. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So other than we talked about having conversations with a lot of people that don't agree with us, I mean, what's something the listener who's hearing this right now and they're like, like we need to work on this. I mean, what can we do? What can we do right now?
Yeah. I think, realize that all of this is supposed to be walked out in community, and we tend to do this in isolation and think that we need to be the ones who fix everything. And so Paul's going to tell Timothy that we're supposed to pray. Like, that's one of the primary things. And I know, believe me, I have felt this, like, oh, okay, pray. Give me something that's actually serious that I can do.
Right.
But we pray to a sovereign God who's in control of absolutely everything. So why we skip that step so often?
And I hear myself saying, you know, all I can do is pray for them. That's all I can do.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's everything.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah. We say it in a dismissive way, like, well, that's all I can do.
Yeah.
And so we want to both pray and act. And so pray that God would change things, and then act. If you've got a Muslim family who's next to you, they just think like they're probably living in fear. They know what's going on, and they know every time there's another attack that they're going to be lumped in with that. And so they're living in fear. And so go over there and ask them to come eat in your home. Just, I think, intentionally pursuing people who are different than you. Or if, like, let's just talk about something that's a big deal right now. The black white thing, diversity, that's a really big deal right now. It's a really divisive issue in our country and in the church. And so if you feel that, if you feel like, boy, I just don't understand why there's so much frustration over this, find a black brother or sister and say, hey, help me understand this. Or if you're an African American brother or sister, find somebody who's white and say, hey, it seems like you don't have a lot of compassion. Can we talk about this? I think that's what we have to do rather than withdrawing to people who are just like us. And here's an example I'll use. When I was a young 20-something, I surrounded myself with young 20-somethings. And you don't know who never disagreed with me? Young 20-somethings. They thought everything I did was an awesome idea.
Oh, yeah.
So when I'm making $18,000 a year and I want to go get a $400 a month car payment, they were like, that's a great idea. You work hard. You deserve
that. Which is good in some circumstances.
It is. Yes. But what I needed is somebody who had a little bit of gray hair to say, hey, young buck, like, let's think about that. Let's try to be wise about that. And I just think that's so important, all these different areas. And that's something we encourage people in our church in all the time. Like, just have conversations with people who are different than you. And so we have people in the church who are very openly not followers of Jesus, not Christians. I love that they're there. And so I'll intentionally pursue them and say, hey,
they go to your church and they're not believers?
Yeah. And
wow.
So I'll ask them, hey, you heard what I preached about on Sunday. Like, what'd you think about that? How'd it come across? What did you find yourself saying? Well, that's stupid. Why do you believe that? And that's so huge. Seeing a lot of the divisiveness over the LGBT thing right now, I've intentionally pursued people who are gay or who are lesbian and just ask, like, how do you feel as you hear this? And so I think we think to even have conversations that we have to sacrifice truth. And that's just not true. We can say, hey, here's what I believe, but I also care about you and I want to love you and I want to understand. And that's made my preaching better. It's made my counseling better. It's made me able to interact with people better when I can say, okay, I don't have to agree with you, but we can actually have conversations about this. And it's actually really helpful for me, though I may not agree totally. And by the way, like, you don't have to tell people that. They already know it. So you don't have to start conversations with, hey, just so you know, I don't agree with anything that you do
or
who you are. It really has been a God's grace to me to be able to have those conversations.
Wow.
And I'm seeing people come to Christ through just having these open conversations.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I think we can all learn from that, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to
absolutely.
Us today. I think all of this is very, very relevant to everything that's going on. So,
Thanks for having me. It's been great to be here.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah.